This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio at 12:10. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman is your producer. We'll be here until 1. And we start this half hour with Paul Nolte, who is the Senior Vice President at Kingsview Wealth Management. Visit kingsview.com as we visit Paul. Paul, thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be with you again, John.
Let's jump into the markets. The Dow's off a little bit right now, a few hundred points, which is, I don't know, not much it seems these days, the way the market swings. Big tech is a factor there. What's going on?
Yeah, it has been a big factor really all year, and we got the non-surprising, very poor GDP number this morning that indicated that the economy shrunk by a third in the second quarter of the year. And again, what was interesting is not that it was a huge number. Everybody anticipated it was going to be a bad number, but some of the details within it. One of the things that we noticed was inventories. Normally during a recession or an economic slowdown, you see inventories build. Inventories actually declined in the second quarter, meaning that when the economy starts to pick up, they're going to have to restock shelves and restock goods and so on. So we could, once we get past the slower point here and get the economy moving again, we could see a pretty strong pickup in the economy, maybe as soon as the second half of the year, but probably after the first of the year. So there's a little bit of, there's a few glimmers of hope at least in some of the economic data.
Why is the inventory depleted in those stores or storehouses? What's the problem?
I think what happened was, and something that we've all been reporting on, is the fact that the supply chains were broken. So, you know, things just were not getting moved, and you had a lot of businesses shut down. They weren't producing as much. We certainly know that with a lot of the meat processing companies because of the COVID that went through those companies. A lot of things didn't get produced, and so we were working off of existing inventories. Certainly we saw it at the grocery store level or some of the other places that we may go shopping. They just didn't have the stuff. Yeah. So it's now coming back, albeit very slowly.
So my criticism of Target for not having stuff on the shelves is maybe not fair. It's not that they don't notice that. They can't get the stuff, huh?
That's right. Yeah, no, so it's you've got to blame not Target, but you know, whatever product it is you're buying, that they're just not making it.
The jobless claims, 1.434 million, and that's an uptick for two straight weeks. I thought we had leveled off on that, you know?
That's on a seasonally adjusted basis, and that's kind of the goofy number. So when you look at the raw number that's not seasonally adjusted, those numbers have actually been coming down. So I think because of what we have been experiencing, the seasonality factors that normally adjust those numbers, because you know, in the summertime teachers aren't working, you know, in the wintertime we hire more people for the Christmas season, etc. So they try to seasonally adjust those. If we look at the raw numbers, those numbers are still continuing to come down, but albeit at still a fairly slow pace. So the unemployment numbers are still going to be relatively high when we get those next week.
And just lastly, can you just walk me through what you think is going to happen with retail and with purchasing? People are saving more money than they normally did for a lot of reasons. One being there's not stuff to buy. Another being that maybe they're nervous about any money they can get their hands on. But when the stores do restock, and as we gradually feel more comfortable going out, at whatever phase we're in, you see that as really buoying the retail sector at least, right?
I do, but the key to that is how comfortable are you going out? And certainly there's a lot of people that we've talked to that are just not comfortable as long as the virus continues to pop up in different spots and be a concern. So it is no longer a financial issue. That becomes the health issue. So once we can get the health issue solved, and who knows when that's going to be, that will, I think, point to much better retail numbers. But that is in the very distant future, I think. It's not anything that's going to happen quickly. And a lot of the data that we're looking at is indicating that consumers, after coming out in March, April, and May, have kind of tapered that a lot as some of the numbers have picked up in the virus numbers.
Anecdotally, I've noticed that too. Paul Nolte, Senior Vice President, Kingsview Wealth Management, kingsview.com. Thanks for your help today, Paul.
We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Jason Heiner joins us, editorial director at CNET. Visit CNET.com. Jason, thanks for joining us today. I guess page one for your business and for a lot of ours is that testimony that the tech giants had yesterday before Congress. What were the highlights for you?
Yeah, so this was, you know, the tech industry kind of had its big tobacco moment yesterday, right, where, and this has been coming for a while, and there have been other instances where some members, CEOs and leaders of the tech companies have gotten called before Congress, but this was a big one. The CEOs of Amazon, Apple, Facebook and Google all got called in front of Congress. And really, in many ways, they were being asked about separate specific issues. But the overriding issue is really the fact that that these tech companies are controlling more and more of the economy, more and more of the world, the way that people interact and connect with and work in the world, and then ultimately also the ways that sort of the future of our society is being shaped. And so for all of those reasons, they got called together in front of this senators and Congress people, but there were separate issues that apply to each. And if we've got time, we can go through some of those sort of separate issues and
right.
what the pointed questions were for each one.
Yeah, so for instance, Google was accused of stealing digital content from smaller companies like Genius and Yelp. I'm reading from CNET.com. In the case of Yelp, they said that Google threatened to delist it when Yelp raised concerns. Google's the, you know, the big dog. Were they gobbling up these other companies or stealing from these other companies?
Yeah, you know, it's one of these things. In all of these cases, this really is about the way that they wield their power. And in any business, you know, you have partnerships that you are forging that are ultimately in the best interest of both companies, but in some cases are also blunting potential competition. And the concern in this specific case with Google and Yelp is that, you know, Google was leveraging its sort of larger power in ways that are anti-competitive, and those are the things that are, in terms of U.S. law, that are illegal. And so that's what the Congress was probing for, right, is their answers to those things. And in many cases, this was like, all of these companies faced similar questions. And what you saw was each of these CEOs try to recharacterize, you know, they said they would very, you know, calmly reply, well, I think that's a mischaracterization of what was going on. What was happening was actually this. We were trying to you know, work with them, and but we also let them know that it was better for us. And in some cases, I think the senators, you know, maybe didn't respond, but were still skeptical. In other cases, they clearly were not convinced.
It seemed to me like Jeff Bezos would have a lot to answer to with alleged predatory practices. Can you talk a little bit about how Bezos did?
Yeah, this was a pretty big one because what they're alleging is there is a fear. You know, Amazon in the past couple Black Friday, you know, holiday seasons, by you know, just to put this in perspective, has controlled about 40% of all, over 40%, I should say, over 40% of all holiday sales. The next highest single entity has been Best Buy at around 3 to 4%. So that gives you a sense of how much Amazon is controlling U.S. commerce, consumer commerce, right? So they have an obvious opportunity to misuse their platform. And what the senators keyed in on this case was Amazon, they allow third parties on their platform to also sell. And Amazon and Bezos tried to characterize this as, look, this is a way for us to open up competition, because they compete against us, right? Buyers can buy versus one of these small shops and use our platform to do it. What he didn't say, of course, is they get a cut of it. So they would much rather have a cut of a lot than a lot of smaller transactions than people just going elsewhere. So it's pretty big for them. But where there's opportunity, and what they really drilled in yesterday was, is Amazon looking into those business transactions of these essential competitors using their platform and then using that to decide what products they build with Amazon branding? You know, Amazon has now its own USB cables. It has its own all kinds of Amazon-branded products. And you can see where they can look and see which products are most popular and how well they're selling and get an idea of profit margins by just looking at their competitors' data. Now, that is, what Jeff Bezos said, that is illegal, or not illegal, but that is banned by their policy, their internal policies. But he said, I can't promise that it hasn't happened. And he said, we're trying to clean it up. We're trying to, you know, figure out. So he played a little bit of, detached sort of entity in this of like, I'm trying to be the good police officer and make sure these things don't happen. But he admitted that essentially it has happened and it may still be happening.
Was there much discussion about political speech and silencing some voices or allowing all of the voices? I guess that would be an issue for Google, Facebook. What did they say about that?
Yes, there was, of course, you know, especially from conservative Congress people. They asked, you know, in one case there was a blatant question to Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, you know, is Google going to try to help Joe Biden win the presidential election in the fall, to which, you know, Pichai kind of bristled bristled in silence said that, look, we try to follow the laws. We're doing it in a nonpartisan way, you know, the sort of usual things you'd expect.
Yeah.
Maybe where it got even a little more chippy was with Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg. One of the most common ones was when one of the senators asked, one of the congressmen asked, there was a message from Donald Trump Jr. that was taken down because he was, promoting this malaria drug that people are saying can help you against COVID. And Mark Zuckerberg says, well, I think you said that the incident you're referring to actually happened on Twitter, but I'll tell you about our policy. You know, he said, look, he was right, right? This tweet was taken down because it happened on Twitter that was promoting this drug as a sort of a cure. And what Zuckerberg said is like, look, we try to be, and they're the most hands-off in many cases. They said, we try to be hands-off, but if there's something that can cause someone harm and it is, you know, misrepresenting the facts, you know, we do take that down. And he said, in this case, this is something that's unproven. There is no cure for COVID right now, and this could do somebody harm by taking it. So that violates our policy, and we will take it down.
I don't understand why the president is so interested in hydroxychloroquine. He doesn't, I presume, have a financial interest in it, and he's not a doctor. So if Anthony Fauci says that there's no clinical evidence that it's efficacious, anecdotal evidence notwithstanding, why do they care? Why do they keep pushing or promoting people that push that drug? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, maybe it's the idea of wanting to do something. You know, people hate to feel powerless. And so perhaps it's just that idea of let's say there's something we can do, something we can take. Americans love to solve problems as quickly as possible with a check or a pill, you know, so maybe that's part of it.
I have 90 seconds left. Let's just take that time to talk about what happens as a result of this. So whatever the congressmen gleaned and women gleaned, what happens? They're not going to break these companies up. Is there a next step to all of this then?
It's a good question. There were a lot of questions that ended with, you know, we'll get back to you on that, you know, Mrs. Congressman or Mr. Congressman. And so I think you can think of this as the beginning. It's interesting that it's taken this long. I think we've been expecting this for a couple of years, you know, as a tech journalist. So think of this as the beginning of a discussion. I don't think the next step is immediately trying to break these companies up, but I think the next step is increased scrutiny around them, also potential antitrust suits, that many of which are already in process. You know, those are likely to proceed.
Hmm. Jason Heiner is the editorial director at CNET. As always, CNET.com is a great source for this kind of thing. Jason, nice to talk to you today. We appreciate your help.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Likewise. It's coming up on 1230 WGN Radio News. Afterwards, Brad Ehrlich will join us. He's the owner and chief executive officer at Orange Theory Fitness in Illinois. If you go to one of those gyms, you like your organized exercise, you'd like to be inside, they'd love to have you, but they don't love the fact that the governor is limiting them to 10 of you in there. I've been seeing people exercise outside these kinds of places. Rode my bike past one of them early this morning.
I went to my club yesterday for the first time.
Oh, no kidding. Inside or out?
Inside.
And how many people were inside?
Not many.
As a result of fear or because they would only allow so many people in?
No, it was well below the threshold. There were just a few people. I think most people weren't ready to come back.
Well, is it 25% then, Steve, or is it 10 people that they allow?
Well, it's 25%, I think, in the club at the time, and yesterday's, you can log on to see what the percentage is at the time.
Yeah.
And the most ever there was 8% capacity.
Oh, interesting. We'll talk to the folks from Orange Theory. And we are back in our studios now with Brad Ehrlich, who is the co-owner, or the owner, rather, and chief executive officer of Orange Theory Fitness Illinois. Visit orangetheory.com. Brad, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for giving us some of your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me on, John.
I was just talking to my colleague here about going to his gym. What is the status for clubs like yours? How many people can you host inside in Orange Theory?
So with the most recent restrictions for boutique fitness or class-based fitness, we've been reduced from 25% capacity with no more than 50 participants. As of Friday last week, we were restricted down to a 10-person capacity per class.
Why did they do that to your category?
That is the magic question that I would love to figure out the answer to. According to the Chicago Public Health Department Commissioner, Dr. Arwoody, because of the increased number of cases, as quoted in the July 23rd Tribune article, they wanted to take a more surgical approach to trying to limit the spread of the COVID virus, and so they decided that boutique fitness or class-based fitness was the correct reasoning. And she said it would take a surgical approach by doing this. And we kind of figured that it's kind of like removing the wrong organ. Because as far as cases go with COVID, we have since the 29th of last month, so we're a month and a day in operations since the shutdown, we've performed more than 150,000 workouts in the city and in the rest of the state of Illinois. And out of that, we have identified zero person-to-person spread of the COVID virus, and the Department of Health actually backs that up. They said that they haven't seen any clusters in the fitness genre whatsoever. So we're wondering why the restriction now.
I understand why it would happen to bars and restaurants.
Yeah, I can understand the methodology behind that. We don't know enough about this virus, and you know we're all in the health business. Our whole job is to get people healthier. As a matter of fact, our slogan is more life. So as a filter in what we do as a company, and I believe this to be true for the rest of the fitness industry, is that we put the health of our members above anything, and we don't understand why we're not considered part of the public health solution instead of, as of now, especially with the coverage, a public health pariah.
Well, I'm not sure that I understand your frustration, and I do not understand the theory behind all of it, although just I can imagine somebody said those are enclosed spaces where people are sweating, they're breathing heavily, and that's like a church. It's like any confined space where people are respirating a lot, then the virus gets exchanged. You understand that. So how do you push back on that if that's the sort of feeling about your place of business?
And I think, John, that's the issue. It's feeling and not fact. If we've performed 150,000 workouts, 11,000 some odd classes, with 33,000 plus classes or workouts in the city, and we haven't seen a single case of this. And the Department of Health hasn't seen any specific case or cluster of cases around this. We can't really follow the science. And when I read the July 23rd Tribune article where Dr. Arwady pulled out the public health study out of South Korea, and that was a serious study. It happened in February before coronavirus or COVID-19 was the issue that it is today. And that study showed that a whole bunch of people got sick in one class in South Korea. And it's the basis of a study that was done before any PPE, before any social distancing, before any kind of new protocols about how to go about business. And that really is the foundation, I believe, of why this restriction is in place. And I'll just point it out, in that study in South Korea, which I read extensively, there were 30 people in a room of 650 square feet for 4 hours together. And that is an environment that clearly makes the spread happen. But that happened before everyone in the fitness industry changed all of our processes.
No, I understand that point. Well, have you had a chance to make your case to the city?
We've had some conversations with the city through groups, and the data, it's just not being taken up. The decision was made. It took the entire class-based fitness industry by surprise. And we had to, again, change our business model to try and service our customers, which we know scientifically, if you eat right, sleep right, and you exercise 2 to 3 times a week, as we all learn in our eighth grade health book, that gives you the best possible outcome, barring a therapeutic or a vaccine, which we all know all of science is working their hardest to bring about.
Brad Ehrlich is with OrangeTheory.com. He's the chief executive and owner of the Orange Theories in Illinois. So then how many people can you accommodate inside your place again?
So in the city now, it's 10 people, according to the city. I do one point of clarification. We are a mom-and-pop-owned brand, and we're a franchise product in the state of Illinois. So there are many different owners who all of us, are working our hardest to try to do our best to serve our customers.
Are you making money right now or losing money right now?
This is like filling up your car with a half tank of gas and trying to drive to Des Moines, Iowa. We're in business and we're doing this now out of a public health service. The outlook is not great, but we're going to keep walking forward. So to the answer to that, we're only seeing about half of our members return that we had before, and the economics plus now the constriction of classes, specifically in the city of Chicago, because those rules don't apply to the whole state, is making it very difficult.
Yeah, right. How long can you go on like this, Brad?
That's a great question. The real question is how long are these conditions going to last? And I don't know if anyone, frankly, has that answer. I know that we're going to continue to do what we do because science says, and we believe, that if you eat right, sleep right, and you exercise 2 to 3 times a week, you're going to have a better outcome. There's scientific studies that say that if you exercise regularly, even the efficacy of a vaccine becomes better. And we also know that with COVID, the four main comorbidities, the four things that you really need to have in order to be in a high percentile chance of a really poor outcome is obesity, heart disease, hypertension, and I'm missing the third because I'm speaking too fast, but diabetes. And all four of those things, regular exercise, helps mitigate those issues. We know that. And so we again wonder why the restrictions when we know that people need to be moving to be healthy. And we're not even talking about the psychological aspects of not being able to do those things.
Some of your clients are able to, though, visit with your team outside the building, though, right?
So there are less restrictions outdoors. But, again, with working outside, we can't work out in the parks. You need a permit, and the process is too long for that. And then we have to take into account the public safety risks of taking groups of people and putting them in parking lots with cars moving. When I spoke to my attorney when this was first brought out as an idea, and there's not all that much space in the city,
he didn't
my
like
attorney
that.
Looked at me. He said, "Are you crazy? Are you crazy? Do you know how many cases I've had of someone stepping on the gas instead of the brake?"
Yeah, yeah.
And also, and really, the product that we do is based in we use science and data and all sorts of tools in order to work out people efficiently using exercise physiology and the latest science and the latest technology. We really take a science approach to it. And when we go outside, we lose all of the tools that we regularly use to get people healthy. But we're going to do whatever it takes to keep offering a product, to keep an outlet to everyone in Chicago that needs to work out. And it's not just us. It's across the board. It's all fitness. All fitness is suffering. And it's suffering because we can't give people the keys to get them healthy when they don't necessarily have the skills to do it.
You know,
on their
I talked to Dr. Arwoody once in a while. I promise you, the next time I do, she was just on with Bob Surratt the other day. But this will be a question we'll absolutely address with her. Brad Ehrlich is the owner and chief executive officer of Orange Theory Fitness Illinois, orangetheory.com. Brad, good luck to you.
Thanks so much for your time today.
You bet. It's 12:43. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. The turbulence continues for Chicago-based Boeing. It plans to make deeper cuts to its commercial aircraft and services business, with total losses reaching about 19,000 jobs this year. That's 3,000 more than it had said before. New startup led by a University of Chicago biochemistry researcher is designing artificial proteins. Could result in major innovations. Chicago Inno says the technology could help in creating proteins that increase efficiency of energy sources, develop new therapeutics to treat diseases, and fight pests in agriculture without using harmful chemicals. And the Chicago developer building the Vista Tower on the Chicago River is buying out its majority Chinese partner for $270 million. Wanda Hotel Development has agreed to sell its 90% stake in order to help cut debt. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Agribusiness with Orion Samuelson.
And taking a look at the grain market at the Chicago Board of Trade, the September wheat contract trading down a penny and three quarter cents a bushel. But September corn trading higher. It's up a half cent a bushel, $3.16. And the August soybean contract is unchanged, but the September soybean contract is up 2.25 cents a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, as we head toward the close of the market. The August lean hog contract down $1.55 a hundredweight, but the August live cattle contract is up 10 cents, and the August feeder cattle contract is up $1.12 a hundredweight. Some positive news from agricultural commodities trader Archer Daniels Midland today. ADM says it expects a groundswell of export demand in the second half of 2020, led by robust purchases by China as the coronavirus pandemic fuels food security concerns around the world. And after record export volumes from South American facilities helped ADM deliver a stronger than expected second quarter profit, Brazilian soybean stocks are nearly depleted, according to the chairman of the ADM company. And so Mr. Luciano said the U.S. will be the prime supplier to the world, and he said the U.S. export market is setting up for very good times on very solid global demand and on competitive prices. We did sell soybeans to China overnight again. The July 30th report from USDA shows that China bought 1,937,000 tons of U.S. corn, and on this date, unknown destinations bought 130,000 tons of corn. That's your money on 720 WGN.
The Wintrust Business Lunch continues with Amy Guth reporting on a number of things. Let's start, Amy, with we've been following that, or you have certainly been, the Amazon plan in Bridgeport for a warehouse. We've talked a little bit about it. Something new on this front today?
Yeah, I think this is so interesting. So just in the second quarter alone, Amazon has either leased, bought, or committed to do one of those two things to 11 million square feet of space here in the Chicago, in the greater Chicago area. And there's now another space coming in. So this is a building in Bridgeport that's going to be built on a tract of land. And, I mean, fascinating how, like, Amazon's really, their focus is about, hey, we've got to get goods delivered to people even faster. In this moment where e-commerce is just making leaps and bounds this year, here's Amazon coming in and making more of what's called that last mile delivery. So more stuff could be stored locally, so that means ostensibly that it can get to people a little bit faster. So we're just talking about, I mean, they are just wrapping up plans for and some in some cases already hiring for just massive amounts of space here in the area.
Yeah, right. And do you have any idea how that translates to jobs? I mean, I wonder how many people a warehouse like that employs.
Yeah, so the ones that they were talking about that they mentioned in June in Madison and Markham, that would be about 2,000 people combined. And then, other spaces, Downers Grove, Silky, Kenosha, University Park, like, that's all they would commit to was, you know, the word thousands of people to work there. The one in Chanahan, expects to employ about 1,000 people. So, you know, we're talking about, it's not insignificant what we're talking about in terms of jobs for sure.
Michael Jordan has announced the first recipients of a $100 million pledge. It's not just Michael Jordan, the person, but he also has a foundation. And the number is $100 million that they're talking about. Am I reading that correctly? Jordan himself and his foundation are planning on donating $100 million to organizations?
That's right. So what he's done is he made a pledge of $100 million to support the black community. And so he's announced kind of the first round of that. The NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund will receive part of that. They will get $1 million. The formerly incarcerated convicted peoples and families movement will get another $1 million. And then Black Voters Matter, which is a charity that increases voter registration and turnout, they will get $500,000. So he's starting to kind of hand out, you know, pick these organizations. So for now, he's looking at legal and voter rights groups, but, you know, said he was looking at, you know, lots of things. You know, and this is about Michael Jordan, the person, and the Jordan brand. So he's looking to, he made this pledge a while back, and he's, you know, so far making good on it.
Yeah, no kidding. $100 million, that's a staggering amount of money. If he's out with $1 million or two now, he's got a long way to go. But it's funny because Michael Jordan was not on the forefront of at least publicly announcing his charitable works. And he's often been criticized because people interpret that to mean he's not doing much charity. He's not getting civically involved. I don't know if he is or is not. But it seems to me to be a bit of a turn for him to be in front of something like this that we can all hear about, chart, follow, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. He has received some criticism of that nature before, you know, but I think that he was, you know, moved by the upswell in the racial justice movement that we're in and decided, you know, now's the time and this is what I'm going to do. So he's $2.5 million into this, so he still has a long way to go. So we'll keep tracking and see where the other, you know, where the rest of this $100 million goes.
Good on you, Michael Jordan. DEO, Delta's a CEO, sends a staff memo saying what?
Yeah, so, you know, you and I have been talking a lot about airlines and just the trouble that they're in and what their leadership teams are having to do just to try to keep surviving. So Delta and some other airlines had offered their workers some buyout packages, some long-term furlough packages, things like that. So Delta's CEO has sent out a memo thanking 17,000 workers for leaving, and he's saying that's going to minimize the number of furloughs. He's still got to make up a gap, so that does not necessarily solve his problem. But 17,000 people—that's quite a bit. That's a fifth of the staff, a fifth of the people that work for Delta Airlines have agreed to take this kind of buyout package and leave on their own. But you know, he still can't do any layoffs until after October 1st because of that federal aid package where airlines are prohibited from laying off workers. But a lot of airlines have been saying, you know, we are very concerned with what is going to happen at that point, and they have to notify, per federal guidelines, they have to notify workers at least 60 days in advance. So, you know, I still think there's just a lot to watch with airline workers in the days ahead. But, you know, I think this perhaps kind of softens the problem a little bit for Delta, so they don't have to make as many, you know, involuntary separations as they would before. But part of that is how it's parceled out. So Delta had warned about 2,500 of its 14,000 pilots about furloughs, layoffs, things like that. So there's an ongoing dialogue that is reaching some tense levels with the pilots' labor union. So we will see how that shakes out too. But we're talking about a lot of different sectors of their workers. We're talking about pilots, flight attendants, you know, maintenance workers, people that are like gate agents, and all kind of people that do a lot of different things for this, you know, for this airline.
I'm angry at myself now that I didn't ask either of the two congresspeople we had on recently whether or not another round of stimulus or aid to airlines would include the caveat that they don't lay off any more employees. I don't know that they're going to get another round, and I don't know if it would be tied to that. You have not heard, have you?
Yeah, you know, there was a swell of that a little bit earlier, right after airlines made a deal with the Treasury Department to have access to money. Now, having access to it and taking it are two totally different things, and we don't know all the strings that would be attached to taking it. So, you know, I think airlines are kind of treating that like a last resort of what all that would entail to say yes to that money. But, you know, I think that's a question on a lot of people's minds is could that save jobs? Because come fourth quarter, we might potentially see tens of thousands of airline workers suddenly out of work.
And when you say that, are you including Boeing? They're planning a big round of layoffs, right?
Yeah, so I do. I have been kind of separating carriers from the aviation industry as a whole, but I think more and more we're going to start seeing that lumped together. So as they're kind of making sense of everything going on in the books at Boeing, which, you know, of course, as we've talked about many times, they were in crisis long before the pandemic hit because of the 737 MAX, and that's been grounded for, it was a year in March, so, you know, we're coming up on a year and a half. So they've kind of reworked their output, their forecasting, and they're talking about, you know, potentially losing 19,000 jobs this year, which is about 3,000 more than it said before. They had said, hey, we're probably going to have to make some hard choices, but now that number just jumped really significantly. That is a mix of, you know, if you think of all the people that do things for Boeing, that's a wide swath of people from white-collar workers to people in assembly lines, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff there, so that remains to be seen. But the other question for Boeing is how they're looking to reconfigure and, you know, perhaps streamline some of their manufacturing processes, because, you know, the big scramble for Boeing is once that 737 MAX was grounded and airline carriers weren't taking delivery of that plane, that started hurting them, and they just started to hemorrhage money every day that plane was not recertified. And every day the carriers weren't even taking delivery of the plane, even just to park it. So that became a big thing for them. Shoes really kept dropping. We saw a whistleblower in a plant in South Carolina, you know, saying there were some safety corners being cut. I mean, they really had a hard year, even leading up to, you know, to the aviation industry really taking this hit. So I think Boeing will definitely be a company to watch in the weeks ahead.
Amy Guth reporting on the business front and on the airline front specifically there. Nice to talk to you today, Amy. Thanks for your help.
Thanks so much, John.